A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents the Edward R. Murrow Program with Don Hollenbeck. These hot summer days are great to be lazy in. And being lazy is just what some cars seem to be doing. They're sluggish. They have no pep. They need a summer tonic. They need Amoco 586. 4 ounces of this magic valve lubricant added to the gas tank soon fixes them up. Clears sticky valves, gets rid of gummy carbon and varnish. Ask your Amoco man about Amoco 586. It's a wonderful help for your engine. And now here is Don Hollenbeck with the news.
Good evening. This may be a day of decision. In the protracted preliminary Korean truce discussions at the 8th and current meeting, the one issue upon which neither side has so far yielded may be resolved, or it may result in the suspension of the discussions with the sequel uncertain. The unresolved point concerns the withdrawal of foreign troops from Korea. The United Nations delegation has insisted that discussion of this matter is not within the province of the current negotiations. The communists have insisted that it is. Secretary Acheson, a few moments ago, restated the American position, reinforced the stand of the Allied team at Kaesong. He said, if there is an effective armistice, the United Nations force must remain in Korea until a genuine peace has been firmly established and the Korean people have assurance that they can work out their future free from the fear of aggression. For the latest developments and prospects, we'll switch by recording now to CBS Tokyo, Bob Pierpoint reporting.
The Korean town of Kaesong to reach a decision which may shape the future course of the world. Meeting for the 8th time, these men, 5 communists and 5 members of the United Nations command, will try once again to arrive at an agreement on the agenda for an armistice conference. During the past week, they seem to have ironed out all the points of conflict on the agenda except one. No one will say officially what this final point is, but unofficially, most observers recognize that it involves the withdrawal of Chinese and UN troops from Korea. The communists insist that this problem be put on the agenda for discussion. We maintain that it is not purely a military problem and refuse to allow it at the present time. Neither side so far has been willing to give an inch. Yesterday's conference ended in an announcement of no progress. The past 12 hours, official UN spokesmen have expressed deep concern over today's meeting, stating that it may be the last if the two delegations are unable to reach an agreement. But what if the worst happens and the two sides are forced to adjourn in a permanent deadlock? In that case, there are strong indications that the Korean War will erupt again in renewed fury. United Nations officers have been talking for the past 2 weeks or more about large buildups of as high as 500,000 fresh communist troops. The latest report comes from an officer of a UN division who says he has information indicating that the communists will have completed supplying their front lines with food and ammunition preparatory to a new offensive by July 20th or 21st. He says they will then be able to launch a full-scale attack. And as if to emphasize his ominous words, reports from the front indicate a step-up in patrol activity all along the line. CBS correspondent Jesse Zaltzmer, now on the Western Front where action is increasing daily, tells of one such patrol in yesterday's downpour of drenching Korean rain. 155 howitzers were singing through the misty skies, reports Jesse, as we jeeped frontward. We came on a private lying in a muddy foxhole who pointed out the objective, an enemy-occupied hill 4,000 yards ahead. Our patrol was stuck up there, but they finally made it back. When it was all over, the battalion commander said, "We had a little better luck today. Everyone got out and only one boy was hurt." As Zaltzmer explained it, even while the peace talks are going on, we are letting the communists know we're ready in case they fail. But we hope they won't. This is Bob Pierpoint in Tokyo. Now back to Don Hollenbeck in New York.
Some progress today in another international argument. Iranian government officials have agreed to reopen negotiations with the British in the oil dispute, but they insist they intend to make no retreat on the principle of nationalization. That announcement was made following a long conference among members of the Oil Commission meeting with Averill Harriman. Harriman was told the commission is ready to discuss the sale of the oil fields, but only under the nationalization law. British reaction to this development has not yet been reported. Generalissimo Franco took some steps today to tidy up his government in preparation for its new status as an important part of the Western European defense system and the recipient of American assistance in return for the use of air and naval bases. The chief of state signed a decree appointing a new cabinet with 9 monarchist members, and the Associated Press says Franco is reported to have said he intends to carry out the restoration of the monarchy which Spain discarded in 1931 with the expulsion of Alfonso XIII. 4 years ago, Franco decreed that Spain is still a monarchy and that he, as chief of state, had the right to name his successor. The decree provided for a regency to hold power until an acceptable successor of authentic Bourbon blood is available. And as matters stand now, that indicates the 38-year-old Count of Barcelona, christened Don Juan Carlos Teresa Silverio Alfonso, third and favorite son of the late Alfonso. Barcelona has never doubted that one day he would be summoned to Madrid to become King Juan III. While he has spent the past decade enjoying the sporting and nightlife of the Swiss Alps, the Riviera, and Portugal, writing letters to Franco making suggestions for the administration of the government, letters which Franco has so far not taken too seriously. At a news conference today, President Truman was quizzed by reporters on the reasons for the decision to admit Spain to what might be called associate membership in the West European defense system, and the president explained that this government's attitude toward Spain has altered to some extent as a matter of military necessity. He said he felt the entire situation had been adequately explained by Secretary Acheson, who said yesterday the USA is seeking to enlist Spain in the common defense against possible aggression. And in that connection, a correction of fact is in order. Reference was made here last evening to some earlier comments by Secretary Acheson on the fascistic and dictatorial nature of the Spanish government, and in an obvious typographical error, it was said the secretary had made those remarks 9 weeks ago. Actually, it was 2 years and 9 weeks ago when matters stood rather differently, and the record is hereby amended. President Truman answered some other questions at his news conference today, a number of them repetitious. The president said he doesn't know if General Eisenhower will be a candidate for the presidency next year. He said Senator McCarthy's recent charge that Defense Secretary Marshall is involved in a communist conspiracy against the USA was one of the silliest things he had ever heard. And he added it doesn't help the country for people supposedly responsible for its welfare to make such assertions. The president said no to a question as to whether this country has any evidence that the Russians have touched off any atomic explosion since the one he announced in 1949. Concerning Senator Paul Douglas's differences with him over the nomination of federal district judges for Illinois and the senator's polling of Cook County lawyers in an effort to show the president's choices are unpopular, Mr. Truman had one comment today. He said, so far as he knows, federal judges are not selected by bar associations, but by the president under the law. The president also told his news conference the key to the Paris Bastille will not be returned to the French people because it belonged to George Washington and thus is private property. It is now at Mount Vernon. This development comes as a surprise to many people who had no idea that the French people had mislaid their key to the Bastille. One would think if they had given it to George Washington, they might have remembered that. Some intensive research by Charles Collingwood, our White House correspondent, turns up the information that it wasn't the French people, after all, who wanted their key back. They knew where it was all the time. It was Drew Pearson who thought it would be a nice idea if they had it back for Bastille Day. Having disposed of these matters, President Truman asked the people of this country to contribute at least $5 million through their local Red Cross chapters for flood relief in Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Illinois. At the same time, he allocated $275,000 in federal funds for emergency relief for Missouri. This is in addition to the $25 million voted by Congress at the weekend. The floodwaters tonight are moving down the Missouri and Mississippi toward St. Louis with the possibility they may cause as much damage as the inundation of 4 years ago did. The city has been put on short rations of water because of danger to pumping plants, and some parts of the riverfront area are already underwater. Flood tide is expected to reach St. Charles, 20-some miles northwest of St. Louis, day after tomorrow, with a crest of more than 38 feet, the highest since 1844. The House of Representatives today put the control situation into complete confusion by voting to freeze wage and price ceilings at their July 7 levels for 4 months. Administration leaders say that would permit a rise in farm prices, that it's a phony and insincere step that would wreck the price control program, that it would prohibit legitimate and approved wage increases, including a cost of living rise for 3 million auto and railroad workers. Today's action is subject to a later roll call vote, and the administration hopes to reverse it. On the Senate side of the Capitol, a bill was approved to increase public assistance payments to the aged, blind, and disabled by $3 a month. But President Truman's request for an equal increase in old age insurance benefits was rebuffed. The Senate also included an amendment which would permit states to publish the names of persons on public assistance rolls. The Social Security Administration now has authority to withhold funds from any states which publish those names. This measure has yet to be acted on by the House of Representatives. The Senate Crime Committee today gave up as hopeless the attempt to investigate conditions in Florida because of Governor Fuller Warren's refusal to testify under oath and his defiance of a subpoena issued by the committee. Constitutional law offered the committee no opportunity to try and enforce its summons, nor did it feel itself on solid enough legal ground to issue a contempt citation against the governor. He had said that the committee's summons of him to Washington from Tallahassee interfered with his duties as governor, was a clear violation of states' rights. Another Senate committee today heard a story of how an influence peddler had enriched himself by more than $300,000 by convincing some credulous people that the United States government was preparing to go underground and that government buildings above ground could be leased at bargain rates, as little as a dollar a year if you knew the right people, and this peddler professed to know them. He's identified as Samuel D. Mason, about 60, of New York City, and the committee will hear his side of this story tomorrow. Today's side was told by two Greek Catholic priests from New York. They told the committee they had turned over to Mason between $150,000 and $200,000 in small bills at his specific request, turned it over in the belief that the bargain leases they were about to acquire would help their order to build a badly needed new church, a school, and a children's camp. This is Don Hollenbeck. I'll be back in a moment with the footnote to the news. Now here is Bob Dixon.
With prices of new things going up, it's smart business to make old things last. Your car, for example. The better condition you keep it in, the more service it will give you, and the higher value it will have as a trade-in. So the thing to do is to fight wear wherever you can, especially in the engine, for that's where wear really hurts. Engineers say that a big cause of engine wear is deposits left in the combustion chamber by incompletely burning gas. Use a motor fuel that can burn completely. That motor fuel is Amoco Gas, the completely different motor fuel. Everything in Amoco Gas is a pure petroleum product. There's nothing that can leave a metallic deposit because the anti-knock values of this special motor fuel are refined into it, not added later. With Amoco Gas in the tank, the engine runs cleaner because it stays cleaner. You save money on upkeep bills, and you save money on running costs, too. This overall economy is one big reason why Amoco Gas users are so devoted to this special motor fuel. From Maine to Florida, you'll find thousands of them who won't use anything else. Now here's Don Hollenbeck with the footnote to the day's news.
This government today relaxed the embargo on exports to communist China to permit the shipment there of Bibles, of books, of newspapers, of music, and other cultural and informative material, in the expressed hope that that gesture may perhaps accomplish something in the way of persuading the recipients to see another point of view, our own. But a complete ban on shipments to North Korea continues. Not even Bibles may go there. And that's the footnote to the news.
When you drive into an Amoco station, you'll see another pump beside the Amoco gas pump. It's the American gas pump. And if you're a user of regular gas, this is the gas for you. American gas is refined by the makers of Amoco gas. It's the leader in its field. And from Maine to Florida, it's known as the best of the regulars. For American gas, for all famous Amoco products, stop at the Amoco oval sign of greater values. Tune in to Don Hollenbeck tomorrow. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.